Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday, the 29th of July. Very nice to have you with us this morning. We've got a lot going on, and we do you want him on two or three, Mike? Doesn't matter. All right. We're going to put you on two, Alan.
I like that more.
And then Terry's on three. Does that work? Okay. Excellent. Good morning. You've just attended rehearsal. How was it?
Inside the round table.
I hope you enjoyed it, too.
Joe will know that David Letterman also always admonished Paul Schaefer for not showing up at the rehearsals.
Yes. We should have been in rehearsal, Paul. We welcome you. We're very glad that you are here, and we have a wonderful panel, so we will introduce all of them to you in just a moment. I do want to remind you that we have the opportunity for you to write in. All you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, and we would love to hear from you and find out what is going on in your mind about the subjects that we talk about. Now, let me introduce the group to you, and then we will get started. Alan Chartok is here, fresh from a taping of the Media Project. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. It went very well. There were no crises. Nobody threw anything at each other.
I didn't know that was ever a possibility.
Well, it's always no. Let me put it this way: always a possibility. Yeah,
when the grounds crew comes in, you never know what they're going to find on the ground.
Ira Fussfeld is the voice you hear right now. He is the Daily Freeman publisher emeritus and also a contributor to said media project, a panelist on that program.
Yes.
And so do you have a similar recap?
Yes, I believe that we were no major fights and we had a very intelligent and academic discussion. Now, that might not sell any newspapers, as we say, but it was probably an accurate description of the program.
Well, you can hear it Sunday night at 6 and Monday afternoons at 3. Right,
they did ask me how I felt. Would you like to ask me? I've only used the joke once. So
how are you feeling?
I'm sorry, I can't tell you because of HIPAA. Okay, let's.
What?
Nice. That's good. I like that. Look, Terry Gibson is here. Terry's with us, which we're very happy about. Terry Gibson is a New Paltz communications professor and a former New York State senator. He also is an adjunct professor at RPI, I believe.
That's correct. Good morning.
Excellent.
I'm here on mic three, ready to go.
Yeah, so you've been assigned a mic. That's good.
And I have no jokes. Sorry.
Well, I do want to ask you a question fairly seriously. A guy I really admire, Don Christian, from the president of New Paltz, is retiring, I guess. And have they chosen a new president yet? Or do you have any idea what's happening down there at New Paltz?
They have not chosen a new president, as far as I know, and I believe that process is just
starting.
Thanks
for putting me on the spot, Alan.
Yeah, thanks. I'm just a simple teacher in a classroom that just really focuses on teaching the students. And those political things that you're alluding to, I really don't pay much attention
to. Actually, not political. He was a great – we've had some great presidents at New Paltz, and he was a great one.
You know, the wonderful thing, and I think Terry will back me up on this, but, except for the pay, being an adjunct, the great part about being an adjunct is you have no committee meetings. You have no – you don't have to go to anything. They'll send you an occasional email, and that's it.
I don't know.
It's not that simple, but
What, do you have a different agent?
Yeah. Who's your agent?
I don't know. I do my classes at night. I show up. Yeah. I don't even think they know I'm there.
I'm a lecturer at New Paltz, so it's a little more involved.
Okay, a little more involved, I see. Yeah. A little more involved.
No, RPI is a little different.
Okay.
Do you have to go to a committee meeting?
I don't have to, but I've been there quite a while now, so I feel obligated to at least stay informed to some degree and go to some of them, as I can. I do teach a full load, so my time is limited. But I try to stay involved.
See, that's why I don't teach a full load. I just go in.
I teach six regular load. For me, it's like six courses a semester. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, plus the summer.
That is.
So.
Man.
Are you paid at the same rate that regular professors are?
You know the answer to that question.
It was a rhetorical question.
It's a state university.
I know.
Oh, no, RPI. I'm sorry. I was thinking New Paltz.
The emails I get are, sign your contract, and this is how much your parking pass will be.
Yeah.
They charge you for parking?
Of course.
They do, but I realized this a couple semesters ago that because I teach a night class, There's no one in the parking lot. There's nobody in the parking lot. So I don't buy the parking pass because there's nobody ever in the parking lot.
And nobody ever put a ticket on your car?
Well, no, because I think all of those people were let go. As That's a cost-saving measure. Now, I may have just screwed myself and I'll have a parking ticket, but I don't. I was like, all right,
you could
this
park
is silly.
Here and walk it.
That's true.
No problem.
That's true. That's true.
Parking is a big deal at both of the universities where I teach, and it is. It can be very expensive if you don't follow the rules.
I spoke at Alan's class many years ago at SUNY Albany. Usually, I spoke at his class at New Paltz, and I once went to SUNY Albany, and I could never find my car after. I mean, it took me forever, and we were parked way over there.
You still haven't found
it. I still haven't found it. So.
Did it ever return? No.
But isn't Peekskill lovely?
Yeah.
We're waiting for Dorcia Pleers. She is the Albany Chief City Auditor. She is expected to be on our program this morning. We have not heard from her yet, but we will. The line is open, so we're waiting for that. So hopefully that will happen soon, and we will also just trust that everything is okay in the meantime. But our crew is working on that. So, with no further ado, we will get going and talk about the stories of the day. The big story, of course, is infrastructure. A bipartisan infrastructure pact clears a key Senate vote after a breakthrough in the talks. We've been talking a lot about this over the last couple of weeks about the stops and starts on this legislation. What's going to work? What's not going to work? Is it going to go through? We have this agreement. The agreement has faltered. The Republicans are upset, blah, blah, blah. So now we have a measure that has White House support. Portman Cinema say all significant disagreements have been resolved around a roughly a $1 trillion package. They banded together on Wednesday to advance this proposal to improve the country's aging infrastructure, overcoming months of political deadlock on one of President Biden's signature economic policy priorities. The day of breakthrough began with news of a deal as a bipartisan block of 10 negotiators coalesced around a package to upgrade the nation's roads, bridges, pipes, ports, and internet connections. The announcement from some of the group leaders, including Senators Rob Portman, Republican of Ohio, and Kristen Sinema, Democrat of Arizona, capped off a series of frenetic talks that nearly collapsed amid behind-the-scenes battles about the new spending and, yes, how to pay for it. With that once elusive agreement finally in hand, the Senate hours later then took its first formal legislative step. Lawmakers voted 67-32 to put themselves on track to begin debating infrastructure reform this week, clearing the first of many hurdles toward adopting a proposal that the White House has described as historic. Alan Chartok.
Joe, did you ever read all of the Oz books? Not the original, but all, there were one after another.
Oh, yeah. The L. Frank Baum books?
Yeah. And remember, there were in each of those books an adventure to one of the lands of Oz.
Yes.
And one of them, of course, was the land of No. And many of the Republicans have lived in the land of No. So now, on this bill, they have a tough one. They have to either satisfy their mayors, their citizens, their governors, and fix the roads, the bridges. I always refer to the down bridges in Great Barrington, which is not all the selectmen's fault. But you know, they have to satisfy those people, or they have to satisfy the guy who is actually the emperor of the land of No. And that's Donald Trump, of course, because he doesn't want to see one thing happen on Biden's watch which will reflect well on the president. So here, these senators are between a rock and a hard place. On one hand, they have their mayors and their governors, and on the other hand, they have, the Prince of Darkness there. So what do they do? What do they do? Well, it's clear that in this case, the land of No is in a bad spot because they're going, apparently, and anything can change, believe me, they can, they're apparently going with common sense and what this country really needs.
I realize this is just a vote to start the debate, but 67-32, do you make anything out of that, Terry?
Well, I think it's good news versus the alternative, but I think we have to be very cautious about how we interpret this. I do think that when this is all said and done, there will finally be something that resembles this particular bill that will help out our infrastructure. But my concern is that this is taking way too long. And I do think that the Republicans continue to have a strategy of delay, 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 drag this out as long as they can. While we spend all this time working to get this bipartisan infrastructure bill passed, we're not making progress on things like voting rights, things like gun regulations. Lots of other things are just not getting done, even spoken about, because this is just taking all the oxygen out. And I do think that's the strategy for the Republicans. I also feel like, well, let me think. You know, I have these two cats at home, and they have these little mice that they play with. And the way they play with those mice...
Is there toy mice?
It's two mice and two cats.
Two toy mice or real mice?
They're toy mice.
Okay. All right.
But I do feel like the way that the Republicans... way the Republicans are playing with the Democrats, I feel like is very much the way that my cat plays with these mice. They're just kind of batting it around, playing around with it. We're going to give you a little. They're going to take a little. And I just feel like it's this cat and mouse game that the Republicans continue to really control the speed and the destiny of where we're headed right now.
I have to say, though, that normally when that game, when I was a kid growing up and we had cats before I married a woman who was allergic to them, that the mouse usually ended up in a bloody heap on the floor.
Yeah, well, I am in this, you know, comparison, I am saying that the Republicans are the cat and the Democrats are the mouse. So I am concerned, very concerned. That
there will be the bloody heap on the floor.
Yes, exactly.
You know, let me take, before we go to Ira, let me just take a very quick disagreement with you. I think, Terry, this is really a major plus for Biden. Because, you know, you can say, yeah, well, what about all these other things? But it is a major achievement, and it is being scored that way so far. And I wouldn't be one bit surprised if you got one ex-president sitting there furious and trying to put a stop to this right now.
Well, I can't disagree with that. It's just that I think that the real sign of a real achievement will be when they actually get a bill passed and what that looks like. But
absolutely,
yeah, no doubt,
you're
so
right.
Far, this is a positive for Biden if it follows through.
Well, I'm afraid it bothers me terribly to have to agree thoroughly with Alan on this.
Listen, you'll get over it.
Listen, this bill is wildly popular. The people in this country, regardless of their political stripe, want to see their bridges fixed. They want better broadband, all of the rest. I think that Schumer has got a chance here to maneuver this thing in such a way, and he pledges he will, that it's going to be done quickly, to Terry's point. And hopefully for Schumer, that will help build up his bona fides, because as I've
his
said—
His reputation.
I don't believe he's been sterling as the majority leader. But the Republicans are going to be very pleased that they will put up a perfunctory challenge in certain corners, and then when the bill is passed, they'll all go home and tout the legislation that they helped bring in, and that's why you see all these road crews being hired, etc. So, and yes, it's going to help Biden, and it ought to, because it's been a priority of his. And I think the Republicans are in a corner, and to the, was it the Wizard of Oz? Is that the analogy?
Yeah.
We have already heard from him. He's already telling Republicans that this is a bad deal, and if the Republicans vote for the implication is if the Republicans vote for this, they're going to get primaried, and then we'll have to see that may be a very telling point in the future of this country. Because we've already seen Trump lose a primary that he supported the candidate in Texas, and the Texas candidate did not win. He might be terribly surprised to find out that that threat doesn't work, particularly when those Republicans that he's warning against have just passed a piece of very popular legislation.
I think it's important to remember, Ira, that Democrats voted in that election.
Yes, so that's true. But
so they didn't vote for the Trump candidate, that's for sure. Important, you know.
Well, then the question is Trump as smart as he thinks he is? Because why did he go out on a limb knowing did he not know the political landscape?
You may be right. Maybe he didn't know.
Yeah.
And maybe he didn't know what a primary was in Texas.
If I'm remembering these.
I'm going to go with that.
He phoned Jonathan Swan, the terrific reporter for Axios, to vent and start blaming others for this loss. So he's trying to. It's like I picture a turtle in a toilet bowl trying to figure their way out, and he's paddling very
cat,
hard.
Cat, mice. Yeah, fish, we get a turtles, bowls.
Peter will be here in 10 minutes.
I really like that turtle in the toilet bowl.
But you know, what was I
don't
just going to
flush?
There is another piece of this that we have to keep in mind, and that's that Nancy Pelosi is continuing to say that while you know she's watching what the Senate is doing, she's more focused on making sure that they do commit to doing this reconciliation process, which involves a much bigger. You know, a $3+ trillion package, a much bigger package. And that's what she is really wanting to make sure that they do. And that commitment.
Try to make sure they do.
Yeah, well, what's that?
Try to make sure that they
do. Well, but that commitment to getting the Senate Democrats to commit to doing that and getting it done, I think is going to continue to hover over how the Republicans deal with this. And they're
if Joe Biden calls up Nancy Pelosi on the phone and says, hey, this is going to be the signature achievement of my time so far. Cut it out and wait until it passes. I have a feeling that's going to carry the day.
I don't know. I don't think it's too late because he's already said he's committed to it as well.
Oh, yeah, he has. This was his bill. He wants it done. She's going to put it on the floor. And by the way, they'll have the votes because it has financial implications to pass it.
These are historic pieces of legislation.
Wait, 10 seconds. Go
ahead. And they need to be passed, and the Democrats are going to recognize how important this is for history.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, of course. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll continue our discussion with your letters after this news break from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It is the 29th of July, and we thank you very much for being with us. Doing a Vox post and I'm giving the phone number. No, it's panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. And that is how you can get a hold of us. Panel@WAMC.org. Okay, let's go to the letters and we talk to Russ, who says the interesting thing about the Republican infrastructure bill are the pay-fors, mostly taken from unspent pandemic recovery funds. The overriding Republican objective is to force additional deficit spending to set up 2022 campaign promises of smaller government to rescue the economy from inflation.
That's a really good point and a good letter. And one of the things that I found disturbing about this new agreement is that the Republicans insisted that this not be funded by asking the IRS to go after people that don't pay their taxes, which was the Democrats' original idea for funding this.
A little guilty, are they?
I find that to be just incredible that they're not willing to do that. I think it's a great letter. It's a good point.
All right. Let's go to Eric by calling Republican leader McCarthy a moron. Nancy Pelosi has rekindled a controversy from the Trump administration. While his Secretary of State reportedly referred to our former president as a moron, his Secretary of Defense was said to have judged him to be an imbecile. This is an important distinction as a difference of 20 IQ points in a national leader can have profound implications for our country. As with Trump, this controversy should be resolved for McCarthy as soon as possible. That from Eric. We thank Eric for that.
You know, I hate this name calling. It's childish and it's unbecoming of our politicians, particularly the senior politicians. But I just think you can't blame Pelosi at this point. That she's been taking fire.
Did she call? I heard it, but now I've forgotten the context. Did she say he was a moron, or did she say he was acting like a moron?
I don't remember.
Okay.
She said it as
either.
She was.
We widely reported that she called him a moron, and I happen to agree with that.
Yeah, but the question is, my question is, should she be above that? And I would argue, yes, she should be above that, but I don't blame her for not being above that.
Well, there's another way to look at it, and that is we know that when she's outspoken, she gets high grades. And this is a political world, and she's doing it because she knows what the first of all, it is an honest appraisal on her part. And second of all, she knows that people are going to like it.
You know, and given that every Republican press release from any House or Senate member of the Trump stripe, who puts out a press release and invokes the name of Nancy Pelosi. It's always predicated by five or six nasty names. Yeah. So
most of which have been made up by you know who.
Right, exactly. Right. And it's because they work in that environment. So if she wants, I don't know.
Well, no, that's why I say I don't blame her, because she's been taking fires constantly.
Exactly.
But every time we do something like this on the air, somebody will write in and say, don't use the word stupid. It just lowers you.
I don't know.
It just lowers you. And yet, so there are those people who listen to public radio who say, let's all play by the Marcus de Queensberry rules. And yet you get a fool like Trump who says, oh, no, that's not what people want. And he does his thing and it works.
Go to the gutter. Terry, you have a different view.
Well, I mean.
You're a Marcus de Queensberry guy.
While I take great pleasure in having him called what he is, and I can't disagree with that, and I understand where he's coming from, I just do think in the long run, it's just very unbecoming of a leader at her level in our government. And I don't think it's useful or helpful in terms of building a base of support from people that may be on the fence about who they want to support. I just don't think it's ultimately the way a leader should operate, and I don't like it, and I hope that we revert back to a time where we don't do that.
Well, that's stupid.
Well,
no, I'm just kidding.
Maybe so. But, you know, she is in the majority. She has majority control. And the truth of the matter
votes,
But still, the truth of the matter is she can more or less do what she wants to do without Kevin McCarthy's approval.
I get it. But also, and I know we're making this an issue instead of talking about what we're set to talk about. But, I mean, doesn't human emotion come into this at some point? You know, I just think of that wonderful Nancy Pelosi moment where at the end of the State of the Union address, she just tears it in half. You know, I mean, that was like, I think everyone who disagreed with that president was like just cheering that on. And it seemed like a very real emotion. I don't know. So if you call the guy a moron after,
and he is a moron,
and he's been acting like a moron, then I don't know. I mean, I get it, but it seems because it isn't used that often that it does show the level of the degradation of the discourse. I understand your concern that doesn't help matters any. But still.
Well, one is the tearing of the speech is a nonverbal form of communication.
Yeah, but I bet you she regrets that.
But the actual speaking of a name and calling someone a moron is a very different form of communication.
I'll bet she doesn't regret it, Ira.
I'm sure you don't.
Yeah.
I just think that she's, you know, however many years she's got left on this earth, that image is going to follow her. And I just think at some point she's going to say.
But isn't that a great image? I mean, for people who like her,
again,
I think it's a great
speaker
image.
Speaker of the House of the Representatives, you should be above the fray. You can express your dismay with what he said any number of ways. But by doing that, that opens the door for a reply in kind. And where does the cycle of end? Where does
so,
the cycle?
So you and
the
Terry,
cycle ends by a bunch of thugs going to her desk and rooting through her stuff.
Well, that's the end.
And she could very well find herself, if elections don't go Democrats' way, she could find herself back in the minority, and Democrats could find themselves having to negotiate with this moron. And it's just not helpful, I think, in the long run.
He's going to give her an even break?
No, I don't. But you still have to make
the
effort.
You think he can make it? Well, no, I don't think you do have to. I think you have to fight like hell. And that's one thing she's teaching all of us.
Well, fighting like hell, I think, can be done in a variety of ways. I don't think name-calling necessarily qualifies as fighting like hell.
It just qualifies
as venting your frustration.
Yeah, well, I agree with Terry. But
I know you do. You guys are in the Marcus de Queensberry Club.
We have a professor and a publisher, and we think on a higher plane.
I like that.
Now, wait a minute. He's a professor.
I'm a professor. I am, and I'm not going to go further than that because I'll get mail. But also, in addition to being a professor, I was the publisher of the Fire Island Sun.
I remember that. What was the circulation of that?
At least 10, maybe 12.
Accounts. Stephanie writes to us and says, was the exact number of votes needed 67? What a surprise that exactly 17 Republicans voted for it.
Yeah, they have to let, we call that in politics, Terry will help us with this, you're in the tank or you're off the hook. And the people who are in the tank, obviously they can afford to be where they are. And the other ones are going to stick to it and say, hey, I didn't desert my president, my ex-president, this way. So, you know, there's obviously a lot of people who sit up there, the leaders sit up there and say, okay, you can go and you can go and you can go.
Right? I'm right. unclear. That's What's right. What is the significance of the 67 other than it was a clear majority?
It gives you enough votes to get through, but not an excess of votes, which will embarrass the party.
Well, but if they had gotten 55, they also would have had enough votes, no?
It has a majority, right?
I don't know anything about math.
Okay.
Oh, or do they have to have two-thirds? This is the reconciliation.
Yeah, yes, so yeah. Two-thirds, yeah, right?
So this is, in effect, the avoiding the filibuster.
Thanks.
Correct.
Right.
All right. Glad we worked that out. Got a lot of letters about the word moron. Tom says, incivility is not new in politics, especially in Washington. It will stop when our leaders stop it. I don't know about that. But and Mrs. Pelosi is on Team Incivility, joining Trump. I look forward to having adults in charge someday. Perhaps my grandchildren will even see it. Then we go to Joel. Here's the quote. Pelosi told reporters the mask mandate is the purview of the Capitol physician. Nothing to say except we honor it. When a reporter noted that McCarthy said the mask mandate is against science, the House Speaker can be heard in a video clip saying he's such a moron. Okay. Well,
she was climbing into the backseat of a car as she said that.
But that's
cool.
You know, yeah. That's okay. I like it even more now. Okay. Linda says, everybody knows Nancy's 100% totally right. McCarthy is a moron, shouty caps. McCarthy is a showboat, shouty caps. Low IQ, pretty boy, country club schmoozer.
Can't disagree with that.
Thank you, Linda.
Do you think low IQ is an appropriate thing to accuse somebody of?
Well, you right. An earlier listener made the difference between imbecile and moron in the IQ points. So, looking at it technically,
I see your point.
Yeah,
I've used the word lightweight to describe McCarthy.
I don't think the right word is lightweight. I think it has something to do with the world's oldest profession. That's what he is. He's a guy who is, rather than doing what's right for the American democracy and for keeping our country as a progressive ability, with a progressive ability to elect a president, I think he's a shame. And I don't think it has to do with how bright he is. I think it has to do with his character, as Freud would say. I would have liked to know him, as Freud would also say, when he was 5 years old, to see if anything has changed.
Kathleen writes, Pelosi ripping the speech, a highlight of her career. Trump is an immoral criminal who was in charge of our country for 4 years. This was insanity. The Nancy Pelosi ripped that speech, at least she should have done, is the least she should have done. We need people screaming from the mountaintop. We are at an extreme moment of crisis.
Exactly.
Mike says, pointing out Trump's lack of intelligence is both truthful and relevant. If his stupidity does not disqualify him in the eyes of his supporters, we are doomed. Well,
it depends on how you define stupidity in this case. If stupidity means that you really, haven't thought this through and therefore you're stupid, a word which I use occasionally, it's one thing. But I don't think that's what this is about. I think this is about his character, that he is succumbing in order to advance himself politically to Trump.
Says, Nicole writes, I am sick of Democrats being too nice. Go Nancy. Cecilia says, I absolutely agree. The public name calling has to stop. Leave that for the Republicans. It's far better to intelligently discuss how the Republican leadership is hurting their constituents. Remember what Michelle Obama said about going high. Yeah, but they lost.
Yes.
I mean, they went high and she lost. Yeah. Well, for whatever it's worth. Okay. Jean says, this is for Terry. If we weren't living during the rise of fascism, mass death via politics, and a climate catastrophe, perhaps Terry's view of etiquette would make more
and
sense.
And Ira's too, by the way. They're both in the good.
All right.
They're both
back to her and say, be mad at Ira too.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to apologize for taking the high ground.
Well, I just, you know, if you want to battle against a fascist, potential fascist government, I think that you need to use the microphone to educate the people, tell them why you disagree.
Can you do both?
Give them the truth and try to do it in a way that they can accept and understand. And I think when you just revert to name calling, it takes away your opportunity to do that. And it damages your credibility with people that are already on the fence about it anyway.
Well, listen,
I don't, you know, there's, again, I totally get it. And there's nobody happier than me to see him called what he is, but for the future of our country, it concerns me.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more letters, and we will also move on to other topics. We welcome your thoughts on the subject. You can either talk to us about the infrastructure bill, which is what we started talking about, or the word moron. Your pick. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. It's the 29th. We have a great panel: Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Terry Gibson. Dorsey Appleers was supposed to be with us. A little bit of a communication kerfuffle, and so she won't be with us today, but she will be with us next week, I believe. So thank you, Dorsey, and we will talk to you then. We miss you today. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Okay, so let's go to Rita's letter, who says, Nancy had a little smile on her face as she was getting into the car while calling McCarthy a moron. She's gutsy, and that makes me chuckle. All right, take that.
Makes me applaud.
What?
Makes me applaud.
Yes. Chuckle, applause. Let's see. We go to Zuja, who says, it can be argued that the Republican senators and representatives who are aligned with Trump are modern Confederates actively and openly working to take down the federal government. I'd like to think the majority of the country wants real investigations and consequences. I'm disturbed it has taken 7 months to hold public hearings and that the consequences of doing little but issuing press releases and arresting those on the lowest rung of the ladder is inviting worse attacks in the future.
Good letter.
Yeah, well, that gets back to my earlier point about how long it seems to be taking Democrats and even Joe Biden to really make real progress on so many of the fronts they promised to make them on. And the Republicans have just done a very good job of dragging things out and putting roadblocks in the way. And I share the writer's frustration.
Good morning, panel writes. Did I already? It's from a different name, and I think it's the same letter. Okay. My apologies. Peter writes, question is, the bill really... Is the real question, is the bill really fully about fixing roads, bridges, or water, or will it be full of extra fluff?
Well, internet is in there also, and if you consider any of these things fluff, I'm afraid we disagree. I think a lot of the stuff that he might consider fluff are in the other bill, but they did break down what would be more considered traditional infrastructure in this bill.
Well, yes. I mean, I think the fight was roads and bridges we want. We want that done. Some of the other stuff we don't want done. Now, you and I can agree that the other stuff is really where most people live. Nevertheless, the Republicans knew they had to do the roads and bridges.
Right. And going all the way back to when we first discussed this many months ago, I, for one, thought that they had made a mistake by lumping everything in together and suggested that they ought to pull it apart so that they could at least pass this piece of legislation that people would be in favor of. That is not to suggest that the other stuff is unimportant, but it's tougher to get through.
What I want to know is how what you said got to the decision makers.
Well, I believe that you more so than everybody else should know the power of WAMC.
Right, but here's the thing. You know, you're
1-800-323-9260.
But here is the thing, Ira. You know, we knew about Joe Biden's brilliance. And his brilliance are that you put everything in the kitchen sink in, and then you know where you're going. And that's what he did.
Well, I think that's probably true. Yeah, but, I think the other thing is he's been in office now, what is it, that's not quite 8 months yet. A lot of the beginning of the administration was taken up trying to get his people approved in his cabinet.
6 months, I believe.
Yeah, I guess it was one. Yeah. Yes, that's right. Well, newspaper people don't know how to add.
That's all right.
I understand that.
That's all right.
At any rate, I think he and he's got as we've discussed ad nauseum, a divided Senate and a closely held Congress, and it's just the roadblocks are more significant. And you have all of this. So you have a propaganda opposite news media, conservative talking down everything. I mean, we could sit here with a yellow pad and write down all the reasons why things have been going slowly. But I just think fine. But he can, at the end of the day, say, "Look, we got an infrastructure bill."
Yeah, this is a win.
This is a big win.
The bipartisan process. One of the many things that will slows it down, and makes it difficult, is that everybody wants to have something in that bill they can point to, and go back home to their constituents and say, "I got this done for you." And that takes a long time to make sure that everybody's happy. And that's why it may be smaller than this bigger package that will be done through reconciliation, which I think will actually have more of what Joe Biden promised during his campaign.
But you're a politician. You've won office. You're in the Senate, and you have a sense of what you need to do to get it all done. What I want to know is whether those people who are sitting out there, the constituents, whether they can add, as Ira said, I can't add. Well, they can add up one and one. One is, okay, I got my roads, I got my bridges. Now, because I live in a Republican area, it's gerrymandered and everything else, now I'm going to vote Democratic. I don't think so. I don't think that's how it works.
Well, the thing about infrastructure is that it's not going to happen overnight. Even if they pass this bill tomorrow, it'll be years before we see the real results of this money being spent. And if the majorities change hands, meaning that, say, we get a Republican majority in the Senate and the House, the way this money is being spent may be diverted somehow. So it certainly is an instant gratification. So I think your point is a good one. Will it really ultimately make a difference in how voters perceive the various
candidates? I don't think it's going to take that long for certain projects to be launched right away, even if it's relatively small bridge projects or something on a local highway. I don't think if that bill was passed and signed into law tomorrow, I don't see why that couldn't be up and running in a couple of months.
Because so much of the money is going to flow directly to local county, town, and village governments and state governments, and they're going to have to go through the process of deciding how the money will actually be used. So there's many other layers of local government that have to sign off on this before it can happen, except for those things that are directly controlled by the federal government, which actually is not the majority of our infrastructure.
Okay. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have a couple more things on this, and then we'll move on to other stuff. We do have other stuff. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Ira Fussfeld, and your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have just some letters here and on our discussion about morons and infrastructure. So when we'll go through those real quick, and then we'll move on to other subjects.
And Joe, while we're on that subject, aren't we on our way to our 40th anniversary discussion tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow we're going to have a special program from 9 to 11, and we are going to commemorate our 40th anniversary. Now, I just want to be clear with everyone of what we're celebrating. Right. The 40th anniversary, because WAMC in various forms, obviously WAMC has been around for I think 60 some years,
right.
The radio station. But in its current format, what this represents, Saturday the 31st of July 1981 is the day that the charter was officially signed,
right.
Officially approved. So that is what we are celebrating. Even though Save Our Station and those happened in the late 70s,
right.
It was the culmination was the signing of that document.
Oh, that's right.
And that is what we are celebrating tomorrow. So, yes, it'll be you, David Gillette, who was there for much of it, and Selma Kaplan will be joining us. We have some great archive tape that we'll be playing.
Uh-oh.
We'll do some, we'll have people reminisce, and we'll welcome your letters, and you can share some of your fondest WAMC memories. So all of that tomorrow on a special program as we commemorate the 40th anniversary of WAMC and its current
Sounds
form.
Sounds like a must-listen program.
I think it should be fun. Let's put it this way, Ira. It looks really good on paper.
Oh. Well, then let me take that back.
And by the way, and kudos to both Ian Pickus and Sarah LaDuke for working very hard and bringing us the three of us kind of figuring out what we were going to do for the show, and I think it's going to come out very nicely. So
I'll be listening.
There we go. All right, let's go to those letters as promised. And Colleen, I wonder if Schumer had said McCarthy was a moron, would the panel have spent so much time as you did discussing it? That is to say, are we being picky because a woman said it? I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. And Schumer would not say it.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Schumer wouldn't say it. My big question of Schumer and the press, and it's a major concern, is it Charles Schumer or is it Chuck Schumer? Oh. We hear an awful lot of Chucks on there.
Well, he goes by, I mean,
he's Chuck.
Introduces himself as Chuck.
Although I must tell you, and I want a word, be careful how I say this, but as a Jewish boy growing up in New York City and with a lot of Jewish friends, I never knew any of them to be known as Chuck. It just didn't seem, it just didn't fit. Chuck was the guy who went on to the Dude Ranch in the summer, but not necessarily the guy who was in the library.
On the other hand, yes. How many Chucks do you know, Jewish Chucks do you know, who ended up as the majority leader of the United States Senate?
I know zero.
But, exactly. See, that's my point, Ira.
So are you saying it's because his name is Chuck? And
yeah,
he stood out?
Shot him right up to the higher echelons.
The only use of the word Chuck was when somebody was a chucker in basketball.
That's right. Terry, would you like to get in on this?
I just think you're about to get a lot of letters.
Okay.
For people named Chuck are going to be writing in.
Make sure the headline is Alan was right. It doesn't matter what you wrote.
Denise writes, "Dear panel, the Obamas did not lose by going high. They won the White House twice." That wasn't our point, but okay. "We shouldn't compare their win with Hillary's loss. For the Speaker of the House to stoop to the level of Trumpian insults is going low. I don't want to see our party go low." Okay. Sean says, "When none of the progressive items go through in this bill, what will the panel say? When the Dems lose the midterms, who will you blame? The majority of the country is not behind the spending. Polling 1,200 people saying it is ludicrous."
I wish I could be confident that the Dems are not going to lose the Congress, but history says otherwise and the political climate says otherwise.
Well, I don't know about that, Ira. I would argue that we have had the worst president in the history of the United States up to now, and that has got to have some effect on what people's votes are going to be like, because believe me, a lot of people are going to still be running against Trump.
Well, you know better than I do about the impact
Absolutely.
Of gerrymandering. I was gonna be a little more focused than that. But between gerrymandering,
that's my favorite memory of WAMC. I'll bring that up tomorrow.
I think I'll send you an email tomorrow.
Let's see. We go to a new topic here. Let's talk about masks. There's a lot on this, and we've been talking a lot about it this week because it has been making the news. So we mentioned this yesterday about the CDC. Well, mentioned it. We spent an hour and a half on it. The CDC reversal on indoor masking prompts many experts, both Democratic and Republican, liberal, conservative, where is the data? How was this decision made? So new recommendations from federal health officials this week on when vaccinated Americans should don face masks came with a startling bolt of news. People who have had their shots and become infected with the Delta variant of the coronavirus can harbor large amounts of virus just like unvaccinated people. That means they could become spreaders of the disease and should return to wearing masks indoors in certain situations, including when vulnerable people are present. But the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention did not publish the new research. In the text of the updated masking guidance, the agency merely cited, quote, CDC COVID-19 response team unpublished data 2021. Some outside scientists have their own message. Show us the data. They're making a claim that people with Delta who are vaccinated and unvaccinated have similar levels of viral load. But nobody knows what that means, said Greg Gonzalez. Consalves, an associate professor at the Yale School of Public Health. It's meaningless unless we see the data. When CDC Director Rochelle Walensky spoke to reporters Tuesday, she cited the, quote, new scientific data, but provided limited details about how the research was done. She said the data comes from outbreak investigations in which researchers compared Delta infections among vaccinated and unvaccinated people. The data will be published imminently, according to a federal official knowledgeable about the research, but who has not been authorized to be a spokesman for the government in this matter. These data were alarming and recently presented, the official said Wednesday. We saw the data and thought it was urgent enough to act in the context of a steeply rising preventable fourth surge of COVID-19. This comes down to a matter of trust at some point, doesn't it, Alan?
It does. I don't think that as communicators, the CDC is going to win an Emmy. That's for sure. There's too many reversals. They're too unsure about what they're saying. Nevertheless, you know, I gotta believe that if I wear a mask, and by the way, there's always somebody out there to criticize me. Yesterday I said I have my mask on, as I do today, under my chin, and they wrote to me and said, the CDC says don't wear a mask under your chin. You see, so there's always somebody who... You know,
why does it say that?
Well, because heard. The CDC doesn't recommend it for whatever
reason.
Yeah,
well, it doesn't. But you have it under your chin so you can immediately use it.
Exactly. Exactly, Ira. You understand, and I love
maybe
you as an
old stubble
friend.
Maybe the stubble pokes holes into it to allow particulates to spew forth.
And I love you as an old friend, Ira. Yes, that's correct. And thanks for standing up for me. Nevertheless, nevertheless, I'm going to wear my mask. Why? Okay. Are you possibly worse off for wearing a mask than not wearing a mask? The answer is, if we're going into another viral spate here, whatever, and you have a mask on, you've got to be more protected than if you don't have a mask on, right?
Well, the CDC has, I think, just really messed up on the communication of this from day one. And I do think we have to reflect back to where we were under the Trump administration, where they were really muzzled. I mean, they really weren't able to communicate in a way that was effective at all. And when they finally got the chance to do it under the Biden administration, they haven't really risen to the occasion. You know, I'm going to teach a class right after this session today, the roundtable. And it's a communication course, and the exercise actually is requiring students to come up with claims and to support them with credible evidence. And I'm going to use this story as an example of why this is important, because what the CDC has done is they have made these claims in an effort to try to persuade people to change their behavior, and they have not supplied the evidence that is necessary to complete that persuasive circle. And they're being called out for it. And I think that's correct. They should be called out for it.
Okay, so let's take it one step. You have walked wonderfully into my trap, said the spider to the fly. Mm. So let me ask you this, or cat and mouse, whatever creature you want, Terry. Mm.
But bloody mouse.
So yesterday, the governor of the Empire State, Governor Andrew Cuomo, said that he had all kinds of new measures. They were going to give $100 to those who received the first doses of at some vaccination sites. And state employees, 130,000 state employees and city employees, de Blasio got in on this as well, one of the rare things they agree on, would also be required to get vaccinated or face weekly testing. But they did not address, they did not go near masking, saying that they were not ready to adopt the federal guidelines that vaccinated people wear masks indoors in areas with high coronavirus transmission, saying we get it less than 24 hours ago and it's complicated information. So our health team is reviewing and we'll have more to say on this in the next few days. So that's from Mayor de Blasio. Governor Cuomo said very similar things yesterday. So So even the states are questioning the CDC.
Well, the CDC has always been recognized as the entity that doesn't have the official capacity to mandate. They just give guidance, which means that local officials have to go to their local experts to figure out how they want to interpret the guidance. So I think that's what all cities and states are doing, including here in New York, in terms of the $100 fee that's being offered to people to get vaccinated in New York City without talking about masking. I think the strategy there is to try, which again, I think the CDC has failed to do, to try to keep the message on get vaccinated. That has to be the top priority of the message, get vaccinated. If we start talking about masks more than we're talking about getting vaccinated, all we're doing is giving unvaccinated people more excuses to not get vaccinated. So I think that that's what the effort is in New York City. Whether it works or not, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it'd be great if we all got $100 to get vaccinated, I guess. But so that's causing some conflicts there. But I think the CDC has not kept the focus where it needs to be. And they have too many spokespeople. They have too many people to go in front of a microphone and speak on their behalf. And I think even as great as Anthony Fauci has been, he even sometimes confuses their message because the way he interprets what they say does not always agree with how other people interpret what they say.
But even the CDC guidelines is murky. You don't know because it says if you're in this area and that, and then that information isn't readily available. So even in New York State, potentially, there are counties and communities that have numbers that would require, under this information as I read it, that you should wear a mask indoors, you should wear a mask. But that isn't being implemented by the state, number one. And number two, it's confusing even for the local entities.
It gets back to trust, what we initially talked about. I mean, we already know that Americans trust government way less than they did, say, like in the 60s. And when this type of communication falters from all of the high levels, it only makes that situation worse. And so we have a chaotic situation right now where there are a lot of experts and a lot of municipalities at state and local governments that are trying to figure out what to do. And everybody's giving out a different message. And everybody's an armchair backseat scientist. And you can find data to back up pretty much any point of view you want to make these days.
Yeah. Well, look, here's the big problem. The CDC is all over the place because they don't have good information. They don't know. Right, Terry? I mean, they just don't know.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that none of the experts know because this thing is unfolding. The Delta variant came out. Now there's discussion that there may be yet another variant, which is why the masks are important. But it's just between the fact that they don't really know and they're not explaining their message well enough, you've got confusion. And half the country has been vaccinated. There has been an uptick in the last few days with vaccinations, so some of the messages are getting through. But people are confused, or people are scared. The people who are listening to this program, I'm guessing, are more inclined to instinctively say, yes, I want that vaccine and I'll be first online. And yes, if they tell me it's safe, it's safer for me, then I'll wear the mask. We're talking about people who are not inclined to believe these things, and we need to be reaching them. And that's why it's important that, for example, Mitch McConnell is now putting his money where his mouth is. He has, in fact, to his credit, been a proponent of vaccines. Now he's using his money from his campaign fund to put in public service announcements throughout the state of Kentucky.
For a good reason, Ira. The good reason is he knows he's caught. And so do so many of his fellow Republican leaders. All of a sudden, we're seeing this shift in which they're urging vaccine, they're urging masks. That's because they don't want to be held responsible for it.
Well, but at this point, regardless of their motivation, even if it's not pure, if it's successful, we're all going to benefit by it. So go to it. Just do it.
I do think for someone, if you're concerned, you're vaccinated, you live in an area, you hear the numbers are going up, and yeah, I mean, I wear my mask regardless of what the CDC recommends or what a local municipality recommends, but that doesn't help me when I go into a room and everyone else doesn't have it on. And I wonder, you know, what it shouldn't be this hard and this confusing, to Terry's point, because it's just kind of a mess. We get over a week, we get five different messages from different entities, and of course it's controversial. It's already controversial which is stupid. Sorry.
No, that's a good word. I like that word.
But it's stupid that it is controversial, but it is.
Well, you know, these vaccines that we have today, which are real modern-day miracles, have the same level or near the same level of effectiveness as the polio vaccine had, as the measles vaccine has. And the polio and measles time period where those vaccines were really coming out for the first time, if you look back at history, the kind of chaos that we have now was not happening. It did not happen. It's because the way the media functioned back then was very different. The way the information was distributed to the public back then was very different. There were much fewer thought leaders. There were trusted media people. There were trusted community leaders.
I haven't heard the words Donald Trump yet, Terry.
There wasn't a Donald Trump. And Americans just had more trust in government in general. Today, we live in a media situation where it's just chaotic, and getting the actual truth about anything is difficult. There are thought leaders that are willing to jump into, and I call them leaders in quotes, but you have thought leaders like people on Fox News that are willing to jump into the voids that are left by the chaos that's created when the CDC can't communicate clearly and begin to take control of the message. And so it is a very difficult time. And what we need is for Joe Biden to get in front of a microphone and to clearly explain where we are and do it in a way that we can all understand and accept and be as transparent as possible about it. And I think that would go a long way.
And it has to be on the same message timing with the CDC itself. I mean, right now we're going back and forth between Walensky, Fauci, and the president.
I think that the CDC, which is being criticized by us and others, and rightly so to a certain extent, they're doing this stuff on the fly right now. This is something that has come. This disease has come upon us, and they've set off on a path, but the path is not set in stone because there are too many unknowns. I mean, I think to Terry's point or Alan's point, yes, we know that the effectiveness of this vaccine. The statistics show that the people who are getting the disease now are mostly unvaccinated. On the other hand, as it relates to masks, what they still don't know yet, and this is where I see the uncertainty in the CDC, is how much of the unvaccinated transmission is protected by the vaccine. Thus, everybody needs to wear a mask, even people who have been vaccinated, because we're not sure if without a mask you are fully protected. We know it's preventing you from getting the disease initially, but we don't know about transmission.
I don't disagree with anything you just said.
Well, you're the one.
However,
I was going to say.
However, I just wonder. So then, why not, when you come out and say it, say, and here's the data.
Here's the what?
Here's the data.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and also when you come out and say, and now federal employees in D.C. are going to have to wear a mask because of the rising numbers. And then when you look at the CDC's own map, it doesn't show those rising numbers. I mean, those are like rookie mistakes. I understand your point. Yeah. I just, they're also, because it's on the fly doesn't mean it has to be communicated badly.
Right.
Especially since, you know, that you know what the first question is going to be. So our data suggests that you should do this. Oh, okay. So what's your data? And then you don't have an answer for that? I understand that we should, like, again, I'm wearing my mask regardless of what anybody says, but I do think that you should anticipate these very basic questions, which the CDC doesn't seem to be doing.
Couldn't disagree more. Even in the CDC, they need a marketing expert.
Yeah. Did you mean disagree? You said disagree.
It gets down to what the CDC believes their goal is in communication. If their goal is to persuade Americans to change their behavior and abide by certain requirements, regulations, which they don't actually have the power to do, then yes, they should be anticipating all the types of questions that will be asked, which is what you do when trying to communicate in a persuasive manner. You try to anticipate what are all the things people are going to ask to try to get out of doing what I want them to do. But I don't think the CDC, at least best I can tell, they don't seem to see their role as being one of trying to actually persuade people to change their behavior. They just offer the guidance. They say, here's what we think. you do with it what you want. That always seems to kind of be where they are.
That's a dereliction of – I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, but that seems to be where they are.
If they said, don't drink Coca-Cola, it's bad for you. Oh, yeah? How do you know it's bad for you? They said, well, we have data. Where's the data? Oh, I don't have it to show you yet. I mean,
I left it at home.
Why are you going to stop drinking Coca-Cola? Give me a reason.
Because you put the penny in the bottom of that glass, and then the next morning the penny's gone.
Ah.
they're not true.
They're not strategic communicators in the way they need to be to actually achieve a goal of changing people's
behavior.
They don't
know what their goal is, their problem is, right. Terry. They just don't have the information that they need in order to be explicit.
And when Joe Biden took office, he said he was clearly going to totally stay hands-off in terms of how he dealt with the CDC. The
Can't
CDC was going to do their thing, and we're going to do our thing, because the Trump administration had done exactly the opposite. So now you see what happens when you go completely hands-off. And I'm sure they're reconsidering their policy now, and I hope that Biden's communication team is talking to their communication team.
Well, right. I think he's forced into it, to be honest with you.
Got 5 seconds.
Yeah, I just think he's been forced into being the official voice, because if he doesn't do that, everybody looks bad.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. We are just about, we've got about 15 minutes left, and we have a couple more topics. I'm going to get to some of the letters that we have on vaccinations and wearing masks, and then we'll move on to our final topic this morning. Okay, so we got this from Joe, different Joe, who says, bottom line, the Republican Party and right-wing media has managed to demonize higher education and has elevated fear, ignorance, and anti-science rhetoric to the point of seriously dumbing down America. Let me assure all of you that the damage is monumental. Millions of Americans no longer trust anyone in the science community, no longer believe in anyone that speaks outside of their ignorant mindset.
What are you going to do with people? There was a protest yesterday somewhere where they were burning the masks in the street. And the guy who was the ringleader of the event was wearing a T-shirt saying unvaccinated. I mean, all you can do is, like Woody Allen, smack your hand against your forehead and say, how can you talk to these people?
And just wait for the inevitable story, maybe of not of that person, but of someone like him or her who then unfortunately passes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they say, oh, here was a picture of them doing that, and now they're dead.
And then down in Nashville, you've got a minister of an entire church that's coming out on stage saying, don't wear the mask.
Yeah.
Don't believe coronavirus.
Yeah, God will save you.
Yeah.
All right. Norm writes, a single virus can be carried by any person until it's passed to an environment favorable for the virus to multiply. Read unvaccinated and yes, children. Masks are meant to prevent spread to others, not only to protect the wearer. Doctors and nurses wear these and gowns and gloves to prevent spread. The scope of the message is being drowned out by partisan politics and no leader wanting to own the result of the effort, should it not resolve.
Well, wait a second.
As a country, over to you. As a country, we look weak, unfocused, and ego-driven, which is sad.
You know, people keep telling me there's this partisan divide. What happened to the idea that there's something called science? There's something called right and wrong? It's not that we're partisan, that Democrats are on one side, Republicans are on another side. It's that there is something called truth. Truth is we have this terrible virus. We're dealing with it. The CDC and the president are trying to control their message and say what needs to be done. Mayors of major cities and governors are saying, let's put a stop to this. Let's do something about it. And yet there's always somebody who comes and said, let's make sure that this partisan issue is negated.
It just seems, and I agree with you entirely, but it just seems like one step below that, besides science and right and wrong, one step below it is just common sense. If people are sick and people are sneezing, you know, you ask them to cover their mouth before they sneeze. So you ask people to put a gauze covering over their face while we're going through a pandemic, and you think, oh, well, that makes common sense. Maybe I'm bleeding. I'll put on a Band-Aid so I don't bleed all over the place. I agree. It is science. It is certainly right and wrong. But it just seems like it's common sense to do that, and that is what we're arguing about.
You know,
and it seems so odd.
You know, Joe, we're at this monumental juncture in this country. We know what's going on. The white middle class, which have had its privileges for a long time, have said, okay, we don't want to give over to the black people and to the brown people and to everybody else, and yet they're losing the fight. So now you see this humongous reaction between Republicans who are attacking in every way they can, including coming up with a danger to the United States Constitution and saying we'll mess up a presidential election and we'll believe in it and the peaceful transference of power can go you know where. So I just don't understand how why we have come to this point where this partisanship is being portrayed this way.
Dave writes, government works at snail's pace on the best of days. Figuring it out on the fly is not their forte. I don't think they are capable of that. When police or fire agencies do things on the fly, which is the nature of their work, it's other governmental agencies who criticize their actions because they don't work that way. I will mask in public if I see breakthroughs rise again by this week versus last week. All right. We go to...
Sounds reasonable.
I'm sorry?
Sounds reasonable.
It does. We go to Saul, who says, perhaps the vaccination drive should be reframed. Urge vaccination as a patriotic act. Patriots keep America strong. Strong countries needs healthy citizens. Patriots get vaccinated.
Well, I think, and I guess I got in trouble for this, I think that the government should be mandating vaccines to every single American. I can recall standing in line as a young boy in PS 106 in the 50s, getting my polio shot. We see now yesterday that Cuomo and de Blasio are mandating shots for state employees. We're seeing more of that kind of thing. We're seeing a lot of private sector, but not nearly enough private sector companies doing the same thing. I understand that there are challenges that could be made legally to this, but it seems to me that the government is on the side of the gods when it says we want to have a healthy population here, and if you don't take a shot, you're putting the health of somebody else at risk.
So why not tell them that they have to?
I absolutely believe they should.
There was a story today about how the EU is exceeding the United States and getting people vaccinated all of a sudden. They've taken the lead over us. And there's a comment here from the president of France, who has just come out and clearly said that they are now imposing all restrictions on the unvaccinated instead of everyone. So there is a real focus in the EU and especially France to really say, look, if you are unvaccinated, you're the one that's going to be restricted. You're the one that's going to have to do all the things that are required to keep the rest of us safe. You're not going to punish us. And I think that that's the way the message needs to be reframed in the United States. We have to make sure that unvaccinated people are held accountable, just like we make sure that other people that violate laws and do things that put the rest of us at risk are held accountable as well. This is a public safety issue.
So let me ask a question, because I think when you bring up about the EU, there was a Washington Post story that was published yesterday about, and I realize they're no longer a part of the EU, but that Britain had their Freedom Day, and everybody was like, oh my God, all hell's going to break loose. This is awful, and the infections are going up, and the prime minister was in contact with someone who had COVID, and he's in quarantine and all this other stuff. And now we read that COVID cases are plummeting instead of soaring in Britain. And so, I mean, I just throw this out there of the media covering this. I mean, I just a week ago they were saying, you know, this is going to blow up. Britain is going to be horrible. And what happened yesterday? Well, the numbers went down and they loosened travel restrictions.
So doesn't the media thrive on big eye-catching headlines that get people to read their websites and their blogs and their newspapers? I mean, isn't the media somewhat responsible for the confusion and communication that we have today? Because here's a great example of one day it's five
doom
alarms,
and, gloom.
And the
right.
next day it's, oh, maybe it's not a problem at all.
Well, maybe what's responsible for it is just plain good old-fashioned ignorance.
Or good luck. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's great that the cases are plummeting in the UK. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But the word was for a very long time, especially for us former UKers.
You're a former UKer?
No, meaning the entire country.
Oh.
Was that before they took they invaded the White House or after?
That you know, that it was really bad, and now it's fine, and or not fine, but we don't know, right? I mean, it just again sort of adds to
the
confusion.
Cases were plummeting here until they weren't. We don't know what's going to happen in Britain. The same kind of it's a worldwide phenomenon, so it's not would not be unexpected if things turned around there just as they've turned around here.
And 2 weeks from now, we may be right where Britain is. We may be like, what was the big deal? Why were we worried? I mean, it could easily happen. It all depends on how the media latches on to information, how the government agencies communicate information, and where that sort of all blurs together.
Alan, your thoughts on the media on this?
Well, you know, the media can't be blamed for the fact that we just don't know what we're doing. And, you know, whatever they report is going to turn out to be faulty. Right, Ira?
Yeah, I mean, by the way, this is a dangerous thing, again, where we're considering the media as an entity. The media that has been the most harmful to the effort to vaccinate people and wear masks is the right-wing media, the ultra-conservative media, both on TV and in print. I mean, you follow the New York Post on Twitter, as I do, and the number of scare headlines that come out of that paper is incredible, even to me. So I think that the most media has put out the message that is a responsible, instructive media, and then it goes back to who people are going to read and listen to and who they want to believe. That's why I go back to what I said earlier. This has got to be mandated. I understand there could be some problems in the private sector, particularly in unionized settings. But I wouldn't mind taking a shot negotiating at a union property this is a change in working conditions, and make the case why it's important for you and everybody else to be vaccinated.
Interesting.
So last few moments that we have together, let's talk about this story. Pandemic aid programs are spurring a record drop in poverty. The most comprehensive study yet of the federal response to the pandemic shows huge, but yes, temporary benefits for the poor, and helps frame a larger debate over the role of government. I do find this fascinating. The huge increase in government aid prompted by the coronavirus pandemic will cut poverty nearly in half this year from pre-pandemic levels and push the share of Americans in poverty to the lowest level on record, according to a comprehensive analysis of a vast but temporary expansion of the safety net. The number of poor Americans is expected to fall by nearly 20 million from 2018 levels, a decline of almost 45%. So, of course, the question is, okay, if that's how you do it, then should we keep doing it?
Absolutely. Well, we should have been doing it long before the pandemic hit.
Right. We have a Democratic administration which also has the rationale of COVID to work with in terms of achieving what you've just said.
Yeah, I agree. I think the question that will not unfairly be asked is where does it stop? Does it stop? Are people who are getting this money from the government going to go out and find a job and then maintain the new level that they have been reached through the government money? I'm not sure I know. I haven't studied this to know really what I think about it. But I do know that the basic premise is good news that poverty has been cut in half. This is the richest country in the world, and to see what you see in certain streets in this country. I spent a lot of time in Los Angeles until the pandemic cut my travel, but there's nothing like walking through the city of Los Angeles in a good neighborhood and seeing row after row of people in tents or lying under blankets on the street. It's horrifying to see, and it's amazing that it's in this country. So we've got to do something to avoid it.
We'll end on that note. My thanks to everyone this morning. Alan, thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow morning with David Gabelli and Selma Kaplan as we celebrate WAMC's 40th anniversary.
Yes.
And we'll
accept that invitation.
Yes. I think Please show up.
Nobody will call you a moron that we believe.
No, we don't like that.
Ira, Terry, great to have you here. Thank you very much.
Always
we'll be back
pleasure.
Right after this.